Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
But God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to another edition of the Q Podcast. I'm Gabe Lyons, and today we're going to get to hear some amazing stories. You're going to meet entrepreneurs who are motivated by their faith to actually go out and change the world, not necessarily by creating quote-unquote Christian organizations, but actually creating real companies who are out serving the common good and doing it with excellence, doing it in a way that's making incredible cultural and social impact. Well, this whole idea of Praxis is one of the great stories I love sharing because it came out of the Q conference that we did back 7 years ago. A gentleman by the name of David Blanchard, who at the time was a leader at a company called IDEO Consulting, major organizations, thinking through company design and how it works, came to this conference over 2.5 days. And during that time, God just got a hold of his heart and said, look, I want to use your skills to help expand the kingdom in some incredible ways. And out of that, over the next couple of years, was birthed this new concept called Praxis. And it was something that we at Q have been able to be a big part of from the earliest stages. And we talk a lot about creating culture and what that looks like. Well, Praxis is one of those perfect examples of literally creating a new way for people to engage culture by creating more culture. And so to date, they have over 130 people who have been entrepreneurs and been through their process, through their accelerator. There's over 95 ventures that they've been able to actually accelerate and improve and bring connections to. Over 350 college students have been a part of their academy alumni. They're seeing incredible growth amongst both nonprofits and for-profits, and it's just making an incredible impact in our culture. And so today you're going to actually get to hear three of the different stories of these entrepreneurs. And part of the Praxis program is that they bring in entrepreneurs who already have an idea, they're already at work on it, but they say, what does it mean for us to think about how the gospel really should affect the way we're thinking about the work that we do? And then they bring mentors around, people who've had incredible experience in the midst of our culture. They have over 150 of these mentors that actually come around to these different retreats and pour into them and really help them start to figure out how to fine-tune the project, the idea, or the concept that God's put in their heart. In addition to that, they have over 400 philanthropists and investors that are now part of a network that have the opportunity to invest in these ventures. So just an incredible contribution to how Christians can think about the way we do business. And now college campuses and college presidents have caught on to this and are seeking new ways to implement a lot of what we've been able to show through Praxis in practical ways for 20-somethings and 30-somethings who are out there actually in the business world and saying, now how do we bring this backwards towards our students so that our students can even think in this way? And so I want you to just sit back and just pretend essentially that you're at a business plan competition. You're in a setting where you're going to actually hear a pitch from an entrepreneur who's been working hard on their idea. They've raised money. They've got this process going forward. They probably need more help, more support, more investment, but they're going to pitch to you their idea. And you're going to be thinking in your mind, man, is this a good idea? Do I love this? Could I get involved in it? And you're going to actually hear what that's like for a young entrepreneur to pitch directly to you. So let's go into our first one and just listen in to the introduction, and then let's hear from these entrepreneurs ourselves.
I too was once in your seat a few years ago. I had my own ideas and inspiration, those things that only I knew about. I was challenged to come to Q in D.C. And as I began to share those ideas with those around me, some people sort of looked at me and said, maybe you should wait until the Praxis presentations, because what you're talking about sounds very similar to that. And lo and behold, my idea sort of presented itself on this stage. After they were done, I made a beeline and introduced myself to Dave and Josh. And so it's with great pleasure that I stand here today and get to present on behalf of Praxis and the work of our wonderful entrepreneurs As Gabe mentioned, it was a tight vote last night. And I'm first going to introduce our Business Accelerator fellows that advanced here to the main stage, Ben and Laura Harrison from Jonas Paul Eyewear. We work with a lot of different entrepreneurs, and their inspiration comes from a lot of different places. And so often the narrative of that inspiration is these mountaintop moments or these epiphanies, and that's sort of what we want, right? But what about a narrative where your venture started because of personal pain or suffering? It's an unfortunate one, but as James K.A. Smith talks about, redemption is the reorientation of our culture-making capacities. And that's exactly what the suffering has done in their life. It's reoriented their culture-making capacities. And that's their venture, Jonas Paul Eyewear. Please welcome Ben and Laura Harrison to the stage.
Hey, everyone. We're Ben and Laura Harrison. And this is our son, Jonas Paul. He has a sensitive, gentle spirit. He loves Dr. Seuss, counting, imitating animals, and the smell of food being cooked in the kitchen, especially when it's his favorite food, which happens to be bacon. In his short life, he's already taught us to experience this world more fully using all five of our senses, because he was born without one of his. I can vividly remember the day when Jonas was born and the joy and excitement that I felt. And it's true when people say you never knew you could love so deeply. And I can also vividly remember when the doctors came in and told us that Jonas may be blind and the pain and heartache that came with that. Jonas's condition has been hard. He's already undergone 16 eye surgeries, all before his second birthday, and all with the hopes of giving him the most potential for sight.
Every new parent has dreams of what their first child's going to be like and what activities they're going to do with them, like throwing a ball back and forth on a warm summer night or teaching them to ride their first bike or teaching them to drive their first car. And for us, for Laura and I, these dreams were taken away in an instant. But we found that they've been replaced by something that's actually more beautiful. You see, all of us who have children love the children we have, regardless of who they are. There's something divine in loving your child without motive or expectation, because it allows you to find beauty and hope in the existence rather than the achievements of your child. There's a compelling purity in parental engagement, not with what should have been, but simply with what is. C.S. Lewis wrote that pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers in our pleasures, speaks in our consciences, but shouts in our pains. It's his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I can say with conviction that God has roused us, and he's rewritten our story. And our new narrative includes suffering, but we have faith that really great things get built when life is difficult. And we're confident our son, Jonas Paul, will have a compelling story to share and inspire others. And our hope is that Jonas Paul Eyewear will be a vehicle for change. So some of you may be asking, how did you get into children's eyewear? So thank you for asking. After his first few surgeries, the doctors told us that they did think he had potential for sight. So I, being the stylish father that I am, began researching options because I was determined that if he was going to wear glasses at a young age, they were going to be a fashion statement and he was going to look like a little stud muffin wearing them. So I don't know if any of you have children in your families that wear glasses, but unfortunately the existing options out there were incredibly cost prohibitive and were downright ugly, to be frank. So, like you do shortly after you have your first child, you start a children's eyewear company with the focus on fashion-forward prescription glasses at a very affordable price point. Another aspect to this business that was very important to us was what we call our Buy Sight, Give Sight program, in which we donate 10% of every frame sale to our partner Christian Blind Mission to provide sight to those in need. We knew how helpless we felt, and we had access 2 hours away to doctors that could actually provide our son with sight. And so we wanted to pass that blessing along to others who didn't have that access. Our first year in business was incredibly encouraging. The response has been amazing. And how our model works is you can go onto our website, order a free home try-on kit. Your child can try on the glasses in the comfort of their own home. Parents can take pictures, post them to Facebook, allow their friends to tell them how adorable their child is. Then they can go back to our website and order prescription frames.
In our short existence, we've received some incredible press, which has been really encouraging to us. But what's been more encouraging has just been the countless stories we've received from parents just telling us for the very first time their child feels beautiful and confident in his or her glasses, which just brings such joy to our hearts. And we just want to leave you with a quote from a mom that recently wrote us that said, "I just wanted to send my sincere gratitude for creating frames that won't make my daughter feel different. She has frames now like mommy and daddy and thinks that princesses sent her the box to try on. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing what you are doing. Your son is absolutely adorable, and in his short life, I am sure he has changed the lives of many, ours included." Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Q Ideas, and I'm Gabe Lyons, and you're right in the middle of listening to entrepreneurs pitch their big idea at our annual Q conference. And these entrepreneurs are accomplished. They've already been successful, but they're at that phase where they really need that next level of investment, and they need more partners to come around and help them have incredible cultural and social impact. And so you're listening to one entrepreneur after the other share their big idea with us. Let's continue to listen in as these Praxis Fellows share what God's put on their heart to do through a nonprofit or a for-profit organization in our society.
So the next entrepreneur I have the chance to introduce you to is Joe Baker, the founder and CEO of Save the Storks. Joe is one of our serial entrepreneurs at heart. He has started venture after venture after venture in his life across a whole bunch of different domains, nonprofits and for-profits. He's also an avid adventurer. He's recruited our whole team to go on rock climbing adventures and takes his two-year-old son out to the climbing wall on a regular basis. Joe also has a very interesting life story. As a younger child, growing up through elementary school and middle school, he found himself in the middle of a national really campaign on a very serious issue that put him in the spotlight and prepared him for some of the work that God's doing. We heard from Pete Richardson earlier about how God works in small ways to prepare us for the things that we find today. And now Joe has an audacious goal. In the midst of a lot of controversy and politics and everything, he wants to rebrand the pro-life movement, and he started Save the Storks to do that. Please welcome Joe to the stage to share more about what he's working on.
Thank you. 84% of post-abortive women have later said that having an abortion was their only option. Ladies and gentlemen, whenever we face an injustice, we have to make a decision. Unless we turn away in apathy, we choose between a spirit of anger or a spirit of grief and brokenness. And though anger is often the immediate response, when we turn to brokenness, God will often inspire us with a vision of really how to minister to people and make a difference. In 2010, I had a chance to go on a missions trip to New York City to see these young, passionate pro-lifers using this retrofitted shuttle van equipped with a sonogram machine to meet women right at the door of an abortion clinic. As I stood there, this woman came walking up to me and she said, "I'm here for my appointment." And I didn't know what to say. In fact, I think I said everything wrong, but I was able to get out to this woman. "I don't work at this abortion clinic, but I'm hanging out with these crazy folks over here that have this bus, and they would love to offer you a free sonogram and some resources if you decide to keep your baby." And this woman says, "Sure." And I said, "Really? That's it?" And I walked her over to the bus. I said, "Have you seen that bus?" But she wanted to get on. So I brought her over to the bus and she came aboard. And I just took a moment to pray. And it took about 40 minutes. And as she was coming off the bus, I walked up to her and I said, well, first of all, I could see her tears in her eyes and I could see that she was turning on her cell phone. And I didn't know what else to say. So I said, "Who are you calling?" And she says, "I'm calling my mom to tell her that she's going to be a grandma and to get some help." And that day, this girl, Samantha, she changed my life so much that in 2011, when Ann and I got married, instead of buying a house like everybody else, Ann and I went out and we bought a Mercedes Sprinter van that was gutted on the inside. And we went on tour across America, casting a vision of how we were going to put these life-saving units all over the country. We went with the name Save the Storks because we thought it would be disarming, as everyone that I've ever met who wasn't pro-life always seems to love an environmental cause. And so we thought if we went with that, people would be get excited for us. And so we printed up these shirts that said Save the Storks. And pretty much everywhere I go wearing one of these shirts, people literally grab me by the shoulders and say, "I've heard of the spotted owl, I've heard of the whale, but who is killing the storks?" And so that gutted bus that we toured in later became finished in at the end of 2013. And it launched in front of an abortion clinic in New Jersey. And 394 women in the first year made a decision for life on that bus. In fact, 4 out of 5 of the women who board our bus will end up keeping their baby. And because we proved this model so strongly that we were able to launch these mobile clinics all over America in just a few years. And they're expensive, by the way. And but building our buses is not just about that. My favorite part is that whenever we park in front of an abortion clinic, we've made the decision that instead of yelling and calling abortion clinic employees' names, we seek to learn their names. Instead of seeing them as our enemy, we could begin to see them as the captives of our enemy. Dr. Ali Azemia, a doctor from an abortion clinic down in Florida, came out to meet with us and he said, you know, we obviously disagree on the subject of abortion. He said, but you are some of the kindest people that I have yet met. And he said, sometimes my patients change their mind and they want to go through with their pregnancy. Would it be okay if I referred them out to you? We were floored. We are praying that Dr. Ali Azemi comes to faith in Christ. But now we have hundreds of stories like this. And it's not just about building mobile units either. We are on the cutting edge of innovation for our movement. I don't know if you're aware of this, but most women that make a decision for abortion call that abortion clinic within the first 48 hours of discovering they're pregnant. That's how tight the window is now. And so we have developed a solution of how to meet these women at that very tender moment. We're going after the pregnancy test kit market. We've built our own brand of neutrally branded pregnancy test kits, and they have a phone number attributed to them that when a woman discovers she's pregnant, she will call that number. That number then comes into our call center, and we're able to set her an appointment at one of the local 2,500 pregnancy centers in the United States. And we're not, the way we distribute these, we're building pregnancy test dispensers that can go on the wall of a bar or a club or a university campus in their bathroom. And women can just swipe a card and purchase our products. And to the investors in here, just so you know, these things produce profit out of them, which is pretty exciting when it comes to a nonprofit venture. I believe God is raising up an entire movement of people that are choosing brokenness instead of anger in the midst of abortion. This is the movement that's going to end abortion in America, and I would love for you to be a part of it. Thank you.
Each year, Praxis works closely with 12 businesses and 12 nonprofits. Our next presenter is part of our nonprofit program. His name is Anthony Flynn of the Gifted Education Foundation.
So my mother gave birth to me this summer before her senior year in high school in Memphis, Tennessee, and circumstances forced us to follow my dad wherever he decided the journey should take us. That included a move to Peoria, Illinois, and it was on Christmas Day of 1982, I was 5 years of age, my dad decided to show up and abruptly end the relationship. My mother and I were put on a bus, and we headed back home to Memphis, only to find ourselves homeless and hopeful that someone would pick us up to take us back to their place of residence. My eventual stepfather showed up, and he took us back to 686 Richmond Avenue. Now, this image is not only indicative of the world around me growing up, but it's also reflective of the fact that I did not have a strong community of support to help me with high-impact decision-making throughout my life. One such example includes my junior year in high school when my football coach called me into his office to share this exciting news with me about possibilities of playing football at an Ivy League institution, Cornell University, in Ithaca, New York. Now, I wish I could tell you differently, but the truth of the matter is that I never even entertained the offer. In fact, I enrolled in the only institution I even applied to during my entire senior year of high school, and that was Tennessee Tech University in Cookeville, Tennessee. I showed up on campus at Tech only to discover that I had a roommate who was still addicted to the street life. That roommate eventually got locked up. He did 16 years of federal time with connections to cocaine and drug trafficking charges. So after being there only one semester, in the midst of that and a lot of other things, I decided to relinquish my scholarship and relocate back home to finish out my journey at the University of Memphis. Now, I was able to rebound. I had some amazing internships. I graduated student of the year in my major. I actually had the privilege of working for 3 Fortune 100 companies and even landed my dream job only a year following my college graduation. However, my story is a total anomaly. You see, the average kid who comes from a background like mine does not normally have the privilege of escaping the streets of poverty as I did. In fact, in America this year alone, more than 1.3 million kids will actually drop out of high schools in our country. Now, in perspective, that's about the size of the entire metropolis of Nashville, Tennessee. Of that number, 50% of those will be students of color and 60% of those will be kids from low-income communities. Let's compare that to kids in high-income communities where there's a 54% chance of a college graduation by the age of 25. A kid from a low-income community, only a 9% chance of a college graduation by the age of 25. I knew when I was in corporate America years ago that I would one day devote my life to service in the nonprofit space full-time. So fast forward, here I was the CEO of a national nonprofit headquartered in Southern California. We trained 23,000 inner city youth pastors in just 6 years there in my leadership. Yet, there was something missing. And that something was what I like to call the and. You see, we did an amazing job of delivering the ultimate hope in the gospel of Jesus Christ to kids in low-income communities. Yet, if you're a kid in poverty, you don't just need hope. You also need a how. You need a practical, pragmatic way to escape the streets of poverty and truncate the generational cycles that have been following you the vast majority of your life. So in response, I decided to create the Gifted Education Foundation, where our mission is to produce first-generation college graduates and marketplace leaders from low-income communities across America. We basically do this in four phases. In phase one, we partner with marketplace professionals who go out into schools and low-income communities, and these individuals teach in college, career, and life readiness skills training for 9th through 11th graders. In phase two, we work with a smaller select group of students, and in the last 2 years, we've had 65 kids in our beta testing stages in Atlanta. 65 kids, a 100% college placement rate, and over $9 million in scholarships accumulated for low-income kids. In phase three and in phase four, we continue to follow them through college and out into the marketplace, continuing to provide one-on-one and group mentorship, coaching, and training. We've been able to also garner the support of some amazing partners in just the last 2 years of beta testing the organization. And these are some of the partners. And as we move forward, our plans are to expand. We're right now working in Los Angeles, Memphis, and Chicago as three cities. And we plan to continue to garner awesome support as we've done in our first 2 years of beta testing. Thank you for your time. Visit us at www.iamgifted.org.
Were you inspired by what you just heard? I mean, I was just listening to these entrepreneurs, that passion. I mean, you know that passion when you just know you've been designed to go do something and you've discovered it. And now you're actually starting to build things to create that and to see that impact starting to take place. Well, that's what you just listened to. And I hope it encourages you, no matter what field you're in. You don't have to be a business leader. You don't have to be somebody that sees themselves as an entrepreneur, but you can still take inspiration to say, hey, God's put something in my heart to do wherever he's placed me. And my job is to go tell that story, to be bold about it, to have vision for this that goes far beyond what my peers might ever imagine. And then to go do everything I can to bring that into existence, knowing that the power of God is right there blowing wind in my sails as I try to move forward good in this world. And so if you've been inspired by this, and maybe you are an entrepreneur, maybe you're leading a startup, or maybe you have a son or a daughter who's thinking about leading a startup, we know that startups are actually one of the great ways to create new culture today. It's something that's happening around the globe, and it's getting a lot of attention. But there's actually not accelerators like Praxis who allow people of faith to consider, how does faith and how does my understanding of what the gospel's called me to do, to be a part of renewing and redeeming society, how does that impact the way I think about business? Because obviously I have to do business with complete excellence. We want to do it. We want to return a profit for our investors and all of those things. But are there some other ways that maybe that shapes my vision for how I treat my employees, how I care for my customers, how I think about the line in which I'm producing my products and manufacturing, and how I think about the wages of those who I'm employing? And there's so many impact questions that a Christian has to ask when they're doing this. Well, you can learn more about this or even apply to be a part of one of these accelerators. They take several new entrepreneurs a year in both for-profits and nonprofits, and you can apply at praxislabs.org. That's praxislabs.org. In addition to that, every year, we actually have 12 of their entrepreneurs come together, and they actually pitch us, just like you've heard, the latest 12 big ideas that they're working on. And so on that first evening at Q 2017, April 26th in Nashville, there'll be a setting for 2 hours where you'll get to hear 10 of these pitches live. And then you actually get to vote. You get to pick, what are your two favorites? Your favorite for-profit idea and your favorite nonprofit idea. And then whoever you select and the majority selects, the next morning they come to the Q stage and get to present to over 1,800 leaders their big idea. And it's been amazing the traction that we've seen happen when a large number of people hear these ideas and want to jump in and get involved. Folks, this is how culture changes. It's this practical. It's this simple. It does take hard work, but it just takes each of us living out exactly what God's called us to do. And so I want to invite you to be a part of this conversation, be a part of conversations at Q2017 that range from what we talked about today in business and entrepreneurship to what does it mean to create film and art? What does it mean for us to show up in our politics and social policies? What does it mean for us to, in the education arena, show up? What does it mean for us to be good parents and good spouses? What does it mean to think about the hard topics that we're faced with every day from our peers and our coworkers, whether it has to do with questions around tolerance or sexuality or pluralism, or what does it mean for us to engage in a very divided moment in our nation? Q2017 is the place where you and your friends can come together and learn and sit alongside other peers who are like-minded, who care deeply about being a solution to the problems our world faces. You can learn more about that at qideas.org/2017. And I hope you'll join us. I hope I can meet you face to face. And I hope you'll make plans now to come spend April 26th to 28th with us in Nashville, Tennessee. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.